Well, good morning, and as not as usual. That is kind of weird. I have a guest this morning on the air, and my guest is Ted Williams, the voice.
Hello, Glenn. Good morning to you. Good morning. I love you, Glenn Colwood.
Well, we spent about 3 hours, or 2 hours at least, driving in a car together.
Sure did. Thanks
to you.
But, you
know, we didn't get to talk at all because you were talking to your friends on the phone.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk to you today, and I'm going to find out all about you because I think the people in Marion like to know things about you.
I think we all... Let your conscience be your guide.
Well, I will. I won't ask any dirty questions. I won't ask you any... weird question.
I could take a weird or two.
You're a little weird yourself.
Absolutely. The man with the weird golden voice.
Yeah. What do you attribute your voice to? Is it, did you smoke a lot when you were a kid or something?
Yeah, you know, no, I'm just teasing. But Glenn, yeah, I attribute it to emulating some of the broadcasters from back in the 60s and, you know, stuff like that. It was personality radio, and
yeah,
you got used to one guy that you really liked, his voice or his cadence, things that he did in the morning. Good morning, everybody. It's 5 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. So it was very personality and to me, and I loved imitating them. So
who did you listen to when you were young?
Hank Spann, who was on WWRL in New York City, in the borough of Manhattan.
Okay.
And he was the guy that we, everybody woke up to, you know.
Yeah.
That listened to urban music, you know, Motown and a few others.
Urban music.
That's what they call it, urban
music. I've never heard anybody call that.
Well, back in then it was R&B.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah.
But now it's urban. When you play a soul format, it's urban. But now they've got so many categories, Glenn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially on that Sirius radio, satellite radio. They've got every kind of genre you could think of.
Take you an hour and a half just to get through the
list. Yeah, exactly. Slow mid-tempo black music, slow up-tempo urban music, you know.
Well, you just brought an interesting point in. I've told my listeners occasionally, one of my best friends when I was at John Adams High School, I told you earlier, three high schools. This was the Jewish one that I went to.
Okay.
But his name was Pinky. His last name was Pinkerton, so everybody called him Pinky.
Pinky.
And Pinky was a light-skinned African-American, one of the few in John Adams High School at the time. And he and I walked to school together, and we are great friends. But, you know...
You and old Pinky.
Yeah, me and Pinky. He hated it. It was at the time, I'm probably a little older than you are.
Okay.
It was at the time when we were switching from calling African-Americans Negroes to black.
To black, yeah.
And one day we were walking along the street, and he looked at his skin, and he looked at me, and he says, I'm not black, I'm not hardly even brown.
Yeah.
He says, well, why would I want to be called black?
Yeah.
And now... it went through black, and now it's African American.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Does it bother you if somebody calls you a Negro?
Well, no. I was always, believe it or not, as fair skinned as I am, and I'm biracial. I've never been called black. I've been called nigger, or the N word. But I've never been called black or referred to as being black because when white people would look at me, they couldn't really tell what the hell I was. You know what I mean? And especially some black folks, as you see now in these days, they don't even know what the hell I am. And you can always look, Glenn, in their faces as if there's wonderment about the fact, I wonder what that guy is, you know, what is he mixed with? When I was coming up in school... a lot of people used to ask me what I was, and until I had to ask my father. You know, I was adopted, and my mother was Puerto Rican.
Oh,
and as far as I knew, my father was a black man.
Uh-huh.
Now, Glenn, my mother passed away about 3 years ago, and my adoptive mother. I've never knew my maternal mom, But I've never burdened her with the idea of saying, "Mommy, what am I?" Or, "Where's my real mother?" Or, "Who was my real father? What was he? Was he a high school dropout?"
Real young when she adopted
Weeks old.
Yeah, so you didn't... she was your real mom.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I knew was my mom and dad. But I also knew at a very young age, Glenn, that I was adopted. Uh-huh. And my parents never introduced me as my adopted, this is my adopted son or my half-son or whatever. I was proudly their son.
Yeah.
So I never burdened my mother with all of those questions, why didn't my mother keep me or anything. It wasn't until my mother was on her dying bed. Now, here's the thing. My mother was on her dying bed, and she said to me, "Honey, what do you tell people you are?" And I told her, very strongly, "Mom, I tell people that my mom was Puerto Rican and my father was black." And she looked at me, Glenn, and she said, "Oh, no, honey. No. Yes, in fact, you are Puerto Rican, but your father wasn't black." And I looked at her, and after all these years, I'm in my, I'm 60 years old. She said, "Your father wasn't African American. He wasn't black. He was Filipino."
Oh, my goodness.
So I mixed with Puerto Rican and Filipino. But you know what, Glenn? The first story I told you, I'm sticking to it, and that's my story.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller, so let's go to the line. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Ted. Where's Scott?
Scott, I went to go get me some coffee, if you don't mind.
He's on a mission of a mercy.
Yes. No, he went on an errand.
Oh, is he going to be back later?
Yeah, I'll get off the air and let him get back into his
ocean. I don't want to talk to Scott. But, Ted, I did have a question for you. What's the beef with Scott?
Scott Spears?
Because he dumped you on the air.
Oh, yeah. He hung up on me, man. And I thought I was enough friends, of the station to bypass hanging up on me.
So he big-timed you.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You guys work it out, or is he going to be back on? You can talk about it on the air.
Yeah. We're going to, I think.
Probably tomorrow.
Yeah. Sometime tomorrow. Me and Glenn are going to handle this. Glenn's going to grill me. He's going to give me.
Yeah, I'm going to grill him. I'm going to learn all about him. I just found out a couple of things I didn't know.
Hey, Glenn.
Yeah.
So Scott will be on tomorrow. He's not on today.
Right. You got it.
We'll be on later on this afternoon? Or?
I don't think so. He and Ted are going
to
be going.
Does he have your phone number?
I don't think so. I can give it to you now if you want.
Hold on just a second. Let me get a pen.
617-779-7937. And it's Jeff Ricard.
Jeff?
I don't really want to talk to Scott.
617-779. What was the phone?
7937.
You're probably going to get a few phone calls from all over the country now.
I like talking to people.
Yeah, okay. Are you from out east? Because that's a 617 area code.
I'm from the Boston area.
We're
big fans of Scott.
He's gotten a lot of calls from the Boston area.
Is that Scott?
Well, he's got a small devoted following now. He's quite entertaining, and
thank you.
Really enjoy listening to him.
Yeah. He just came in, but I think he's busy doing some stuff.
Oh, hey, Scott, are you on?
No, he's not on. he's delivering stuff.
What does the guy want?
Hi, Scott.
He said hi, Scott. Hi. I got things to do. Don't you hear the ambulance out there? They're coming to pick me up.
Yeah.
What do you need?
Scott, I was hoping to talk to you. I'm calling from Boston. I just didn't hear you this morning. How's everything going?
He's
from Boston
this morning. Okay, well, I'll be on tomorrow with Ted and Mary Ellen Withrow. We'll be on from 8 a.m. until noon or 1 tomorrow. So tune in tomorrow. It's going to be Golden Voice, 40th Treasurer of the United States, and me. And you can call in and ask all your questions.
Can I ask you a question now?
Can he ask you a question now? Okay, well, go ahead.
So you're pretty good at booking guests. What would you recommend if someone wanted to book, like, Clint Eastwood or Stevie Van Zandt, because you've had some pretty famous guests on.
Who are you?
I'm calling from Boston. I'm one of your fans from Boston.
You understand? Do you have a show?
No.
Well, if you want to book a guest, you got to get a show first.
But what would you recommend? Do you
get a show?
Say you're flexible on the time, or Or do you say, you know, you lock a person in on the date and the time? What's your approach? Because you've been pretty successful.
Yeah, but you got to have a show. Now, remember, get a show, and then you can have Golden Voice on.
Okay, so let's say I had a show.
Well, I did. Well, I got to go, but call back tomorrow, and we can have
You'll be on tomorrow?
yes, I'll be on tomorrow.
But you're on right now. Are you not on right now?
Drop the call.
He's in the middle of doing errands. So
thank you, Boston.
He's got to run out.
All right, well, great show, Glenn and Ted. Good to hear from you guys.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Bye-bye. All right. Yeah.
What is that guy, a stalker?
we're not quite sure. Scott has gotten a surfeit of callers from the Boston area ever since about a week ago. Some blogger called him from Boston and asked him some kind of mean questions about his interview with
Bill Cosby.
Yeah. And those mean questions, Scott answered them all and was very nice to the gentleman.
Yeah.
But, you know, after the guy was trying to, you know, do a thing.
Yeah.
And so Scott finally, actually he hung up on the first time he called, but the second time he called, he talked to him for about 10 minutes. I was here. And he was very kind and cordial to the gentleman. And the gentleman just couldn't understand that the lawyers for Bill Cosby had told Scott, you cannot ask him about
that. Yeah, did he do
it
or whatever?
Yeah, because it was pending legal stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's why he didn't ask him if he had raped those women, you know?
Right.
That's what this guy from Boston wanted him to ask him, and he says, there's nothing I can do about it. So,
well, you know, a lot of people were very, very surprised, hurt, and everything else about that whole situation with Bill Cosby.
I was hurt. I used to watch him all the time, loved his show. I'm hurt by a lot of that. I was hurt when Cuomo, when I found out that Cuomo was kind of a sleaze.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know. What's wrong with us, guys?
I was hurt about Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky.
I was, too. Yeah, I really was.
Bill, I can't believe it.
I would have thought you would have picked a better-looking woman.
Monica's
a pretty girl. She was just a little on the heavier side. But
If I had a choice between Chelsea and Monica, I think I'd have went the Monica thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not speaking about the ex-president's daughter looking like a mule or something.
All right.
Odd looking girl.
Do you want to tell that? I don't think we told it on the air about that story about your mother.
Which one?
Where she told you what your racial background is.
She told me that I'm Puerto Rican and I'm Filipino.
As opposed to white
African American and Puerto Rican.
Oh, okay.
So now I'm officially a Filorican.
But, a Filorican.
Yeah,
okay.
Filorican. Not Puerto Rican, I'm a Filorican. I always thought, Glenn, that my kids always had somewhat of an Asian-type tone. When we wake up in the morning, our eyes are somewhat slanted.
All of them.
Yeah, our faces are somewhat flat-looking, you know. Like I said, my first story, that's my story.
Okay.
Because I haven't met any real tall. I'm 6 foot one. So 6 foot one and a half. I haven't met very many tall Puerto Ricans or either Asians.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know of any Barry White sounding Filipinos.
I don't either.
Know, watch an all new Filipino. You know, that kind of thing. Now Puerto Ricans do have that on Telemundo. You know, they have those kind of Spanish voices that talk like that, but. Again, Puerto Rican and Negro, black, all those. colored. That was the killer part. Yeah. Are you colored?
We're all colored.
Yeah.
colored some way.
That was about as bad as the N-word. Yeah. Are you colored?
Well, I doubt that Pinky liked being called colored either.
Yeah, I don't like that one at all.
Yeah, no, I'm not fond of that either. Because we are all
colored,
have color in our
some way.
Pigment in our skin. Anyway, now, I just want to tell, I don't know how many people have seen your picture. I'm sure a lot of people have seen you on TV and stuff like that. But for those of you who haven't seen Ted's a tall, thin, good-looking not so dark skinned, but you know, kind of mid.
Fair. I'm what they refer to as light, bright, and damn near white. You know, those
and,
kind of things.
And he has beautiful wavy gray hair, which I envy you with.
Oh.
With. But see, he's a good looking guy, and I don't know how anybody could even notice what color he was.
Yeah. I've grown out of that aspect of things. You know, my father. He's a very dark-complected man.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's black. So there were a lot of times when I was going to schools that various school teachers, principals, and all didn't associate us as being father and son.
Oh.
Matter of fact, when my father would come to schools for any type of pick-me-up because the principal called and had, you know, or anything like that, they would hold me back until I identified the man as being my father before they'd release me in his custody.
Huh.
And one time, my dad whipped my butt in school, and that was almost like he almost got arrested, you know, at the time. Which I would, it would have been okay with me, but he was whipping me, and I think because I sassed a teacher or something. But it was hard as hell for them white folks to sit up and swallow the fact that this black man is whipping this, what they thought was a white child.
Oh, jeez.
You know, like the help is whipping the, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, along the same line, you know, so many people didn't like Barack Obama because he was black. And all my, and I worked on Barack's campaign for both times that he ran.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very much in favor of Barack. And it has nothing to do with whether you like Barack or you don't like Barack.
Yeah.
Barack was, I would tell my friends, Barack is white. His mother is white.
Yeah. Wasn't he Hawaiian or something?
His mother was from, I forget where
Maui
she was from.
Yeah.
But she was white, and his dad was...
He was African.
African. Kenya. Yeah, Kenya. So, anyway, kind of interesting thing.
You know, we're pretty much all mixed in some branch.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jewish, Italian, you know. It's very hard to find a real thoroughbred, unless you're down in Kentucky in the Appalachian area.
Yeah, but that's, you know, because you can find some your dad was with your sister.
Yeah, a lot of inbreeding.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's terrible to say.
Yeah, people from Kentucky are going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? We're inbreeding. Yeah.
Have you noticed that lately on radio and television, so many of the announcers now, you used to... White people used to say, oh, that's a black announcer. You can't tell anymore.
No, you can't.
You know, the voices are... Well, they all went to Columbia School of Broadcasting.
Well, there you go.
That's where I went, by the way.
They speak very articulate and enunciate well.
Right. It's temperature instead of temperature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good old white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Appalachian.
Wow. Yeah. I was reading through, well, last night I was watching Facebook. No, not Facebook. I was watching
YouTube.
YouTube. Thank you. I was watching YouTube and trying to understand why I'm an atheist. I am. And
you are?
Yes.
Well, nice being on your show, buddy. You have a good one.
But I'm also a son of a Methodist minister.
Yeah.
So I have been.
I was just getting ready to say.
Yeah, I've been steeped in religion, and I believe in religion. I believe it's done a world of good, but I also believe it's done a world of bad for us.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I was watching this, and I was. It's really fun to have enough time, now that I'm retired, to really do retrospective stuff. Think about who I am, why I am where I am.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't call myself an atheist probably until about 2 years ago. When I was running for office, I didn't even mention that I was
Back then,
I called myself an agnostic, and I probably am more agnostic than atheist. I'll leave the door open.
Because
I'm not smart enough to know
you,
the answer.
What persuaded you to even think either or? So do you believe in creation or evolution?
Yes, I believe in evolution, and I believe that the Big Bang was the beginning of something, but I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. And that's one of the things I was watching YouTube for. I was watching Tyson, deGrasse, whatever his name is, the astrophysicist, because I really would like to know what happened before the Big Bang. You know?
Ancient astronaut theory.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's a really good thing that a lot of my Christian friends, most of my, most of my friends are Christian, they say to me, well, what happened before the Big Bang? And if you don't know the answer to that, then you have to go back to religion. you have to go back to God, right? Exactly. And so I've been trying to find that out and find out whether...
I've been trying to find out this new world order and how the Freemasons and the... And the Scottish link.
Scottish Rite.
Scottish Rite and all of that,
That's kind of weird stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of
evil. Oh, I was looking at that Freemason thing.
Yeah.
That was really 33rd degree.
Degree Mason. My father was a 32nd degree Mason. Okay. That's the common Mason.
Yeah, but they said geometrically, or you know, the G stands for geometry.
Is that right?
Yeah, or God. Mm-hmm. And God controls the universe, which is geometric, and the paths in which the Capitol, the White House, and the Washington Monument, and all of those things geometrically make the
sign of the pentagram.
Yeah.
Do they really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
They are linked. They are blocked. George Washington, which was an architect as well, aligned all of those streets that connect from the Washington Monument. You can go on this temple site that the Freemasons worship or whatever they do.
Yeah.
Each step, it's 33 columns that hold it up. The steps are geometrically in order to go upstairs, and it's a half-built pyramid at the top. Everything is 33rd. It has Christ was 33 when he died.
Yeah, that's true.
Columns. There's 33 columns around the building, right? Mm-hmm. And they're each 33 feet high.
Jeez.
So
shades of Stonehenge.
And so they're assuming that there's under the Denver International Airport is an underground city which is preparing for the new order of things.
Okay.
Yeah, and the Illuminati and all those other things, but I've been learning about that.
I'll be long gone by the time that happens, I think.
Yeah.
I hope.
Well, the Denver airport is the biggest.
Okay.
And it's 33 miles long.
Don't they get angry being down there with all the noise that they must have?
No, they're 33 feet down underneath there. Yeah, they're 33 feet down. Yeah.
Oh, me. Well, let's get back to more about you.
Okay,
that's a lot about you.
I'm a biracial brother who's trying to learn about the new order of things where black and white won't make no difference.
Now,
you have to be a Mason.
Now, it was Matt, wasn't it Matt Lauer that initially got you on the air?
No, there was a gentleman in Columbus from the Columbus Dispatch. His name was Doral Chenoweth.
Okay.
And Doral was riding along, and he happened to see me one day, but he read my sign, which said, I have a God-given gift of voice. I'm an ex-radio announcer who's fallen on hard times. Please, any donation would be gratefully appreciated. Thank you, and God bless.
How could he read all that while he's driving by?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the problems, Glenn, that I've always had, because people would pull up to my sign and they would attempt to start reading it, but they look back at the traffic light and see that it was in the process of changing, and sorry about your luck, buddy, you know, I'm going on. But every time the police, the Columbus Police Department or the sheriffs, would come by and destroy my sign, I would always write, I have a God-given gift of voice. That was my way of acknowledgement, because according to Psalms 33, according to Psalms 3, 5, and 6, chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not toward your own understanding. But here's the key. Acknowledge me in all your ways, and I will direct your path. So my way of acknowledging God was to put it in my sign.
Yeah.
Most people say, God bless you, need help, want food, will work for food, you know.
Yeah.
Even the homeless guys would come over to me and say, damn, man, you put too much stuff on that sign.
Yeah, well, they don't have time to read it. Yeah.
Just put homeless vet. Yeah. Just put need your help or whatever. I said, I'm compelled to do this.
Okay.
So leave me to hell alone.
And that's why
Nobody mess with me on those highway exit ramps. And as you know, Glenn, society does not deem able-bodied people who stand on exit ramps holding signs begging for money too favorable.
No.
You know, you get a job, you bum.
Yeah, you're just
crackhead. I ain't giving you nothing. You talking about the word?
I can hear those things.
Yeah, nigga, get off the corner.
Yeah, I can hear people saying things like that. Well, and see, that's the nice thing about being a being where I am right now. My mother and father raised me to love everybody, and I know that's very cliche. But I do love everybody. I mean, there are a few people that I don't love.
Yeah.
And what is the definition of love? But I do care about everybody. And I think that's the nice thing that religion has done for us, is that it has taught us to have compassion. Yeah. And
Or what would Jesus do?
Yeah. I love that. That question.
Yeah.
And I ask myself that. And, you know, even though I say I'm an atheist, I try to call myself an atheistic Christian. I go by the New Testament. If Jesus said it, I'm going to try to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Kind of interesting.
One day at a time.
Yeah. I can only do what I can do.
My father was a Jehovah's Witness.
Really?
My mother was a Baptist, and they sent me to Catholic parochial school.
Somebody was messed up in that house.
So I had a pretty wide. It's in my book, and probably part of my story that I've told on many news outlets, and I'm telling you today.
Yeah,
yeah, I had a very wide variety of religion or Christianity or whatever. I went out with my father. And placed, I know you've seen Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on doors.
Sure. My son's mother-in-law is a Jehovah's Witness, and we talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my mom, well, in the Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, their way of worship in song, as most, you know, is like real low-key, you know, they just... My mother, they used to jump up and down and feel the Holy Ghost.
Baptist, of course.
Yes, Baptist. They'd lap the churches and all, you know, and it scared the hell out of me. Here I am in a very calm atmosphere, only to go to my mother's service and see people jumping and hollering and screaming and falling out and running around the church. When I saw them running around the church, that's when the hell I said, wait, I don't know what they're doing.
What's going on?
Yeah, this is a little spooky, Mom.
Well,
and then going to Catholic school, they had all those saints in monuments and statues and
idols.
idols, yeah. And then their only worship songs would be like, ooh, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Yeah, that was spooky, too.
Yeah. Interesting that you bring that up. My father was a minister at St. Paul's Methodist Church, which still exists in South Bend, Indiana. And we were right on the edge of what they called a changing neighborhood. And it's still on the edge of a changing neighborhood.
Yeah.
So right up the street from us was the... it was a Baptist church, and I'm trying to... It's a very typical Baptist church name. And they sang all night. We could hear them a block away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun.
Berean Baptist Church.
Yeah. Well, when I got older, I was a driver for a lady whose husband owned the Ball Jar and Can Company, or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
And so I was her driver. I was a white Miss
Daisy.
Yeah. Anyway, I was a driver for her.
Daisy.
And I was a driver for her. And every Wednesday night, this is up in northern Michigan, very exclusive area.
Mm-hmm.
Every Wednesday night, we would go to this Baptist church because they would have the Wednesday night services for all the maids and butlers of the area.
Okay.
And they would sing, well, they would sing any kind of religious music you can imagine.
Yeah.
And that kind of shook me up because being a Methodist, we were all kind of staid when we sang. And they were having a great time.
Yeah.
And it really gave me appreciation for the Negro spiritual or whatever.
Oh, my God.
And it gave me appreciation for that. Excited
pump,
about that's
it.
And for a longest time, I wanted the Methodist Church to get into that. Now, I understand.
Trying to change the ways of your method, yeah.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, all the Methodist people were 98 years old and white-haired and didn't know how to dance and couldn't clap off the beat.
Boy, I'm glad you can talk about those things.
Yeah. Anyway, all right.
But so, you're absolutely right. And needless to say, Glenn, I did not go out in the field service, as they refer to it with my dad anymore, because people have a tendency of sicking dogs on Jehovah's Witnesses.
Really? Oh, my.
Up in New York.
Oh.
Sick dogs or throw things. You know, you're knocking on somebody's door early morning, Saturday morning, I'm talking about, hi, I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and today we're, you know, placing a watchtower or awake, you know.
Yeah, and the dog comes in the door.
And then I knock some of my friends' doors, and they be laughing at me. So I said, Daddy, I'm no longer going to be here. So I got caught smoking a cigarette outside Kingdom Hall, and it was referencing conduct unbecoming of a Christian. So I got what they call disfellowshipped.
Disfellowshipped.
Yeah.
Like
excommunicated.
That's what it was in the Catholic Church, yeah.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, now they say in Scientology, what do you think of L. Ron Hubbard and the Church of Christ and in Scientology, excuse me?
I think it's weird.
Yeah, that's a weird. but also, they discommunicate you as well.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, and if your father and
mother... Don't they call it shun you?
Yeah,
or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it means the same thing to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it does.
But you're right. And they shun you, and that's terrible. And people spend a lot of money to become a member of that church. I've never seen. Now, what happened to the days of Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker?
Well, people spent a lot of money to be part of that church, too, though.
Yeah, yeah. People, well, they're in jail, I'm sure. No,
I think he's out.
He died.
Yeah, he died. She's out now.
Yeah, okay.
Or may, she may have died. I don't know.
And she's selling cosmetics with Mary Kay.
Yeah, I was going to say, she died, her eyelids wouldn't open.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, she's become mummified with her own makeup.
Okay. Yeah. Well, where were you born?
Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, in Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn. Now, I know the next question may come. What brings you to Ohio, whatever?
No, that wasn't my next question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Give us that.
I was going to say the reason that I'm even in the state of Ohio, in Columbus particularly, is that my parents were from Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, so your real parents? Or
no, no. My adoptive. Yeah,
adopted.
The only parents I know.
Yeah. Your real parents. Yeah,
yeah, my real parents. But they were from Columbus, and we made a lot of trips as a child in my youth back and forth, either to, because all my family's in Columbus. Many of them are deceased now, but we would always come to Ohio for the Ohio State Fair.
Oh, yeah. That's
annually.
Yeah.
And then we would come to graduations, funerals,
sure.
You know, those kind of things, weddings or whatever. You know, your Aunt Betty's getting married this week. We're going to Columbus. And Columbus always epitomized to me as a child, Queens or Long Island.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
I see that.
Upstate New York,
yeah.
You know, those kind of things. And I always liked the little green and backyards and front yards and all. I'm from Brooklyn, where it's noted as being the concrete jungle.
Well, was Brooklyn a tough neighborhood
Very
when you
much
were there?
So. I was in the projects.
Yeah.
And I was born in 57, so I'm 63 this year.
Oh, you're a young
I'll
boy.
I'll be 64 this year.
Yeah. Can I call you a boy?
Yeah. I'll be 64 this year, and when coming up in the, during that period, yeah, it was rough. Now, you're talking about racial stuff.
Yeah.
I used to get beat up in some neighborhoods for being too white.
Really?
Yeah, and then I'd get beat up in white neighborhoods sometimes for being a little too dark, you know.
Yeah.
In the summertime, I tan up very big. That's the Puerto Rican side of
yeah.
me. I don't get quite as black, but, you know, I brown up. And
yeah.
So white people used to whip me for being too dark and being too white. So I got very resentful of that. So I started growing up whipping black folks as they, or learning how to whip their butts, you know, protecting. I'm not a white boy. I used to always have to say, I'm not white. I'm not white. I'm not white. And then I'd have to go in the other neighborhood and say, I'm white. I'm white. I'm white.
It's a shame that we had to do that sort
yeah.
of thing.
You know about Coney Island area and
yeah.
Bensonhurst, Flatbush Avenue, all of the... White stayed over on that side. Yep. We stayed on our side of the tracks. You know that.
That's kind
of,
interesting.
So well,
and I imagine it still goes on. I experienced
prejudice. Yeah, it does. I experienced prejudice at an early age.
See, that's one of the things that I've been trying to explain to people here in Lily White, Marion.
Marion, Ohio. I like Marion.
Yeah, I do too. And it's not really Lily White, but
no, it's not.
It's I think
you got big five, black Bob Nunley.
Yeah, I love Bob. Yeah. It's about 5 or 6% African American, but one of the things I've been trying to do is explain to people that there really isn't any difference at all between us. And like you said earlier, we're all kind of mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working at it.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Some of the white folks aren't sure of what they are mixed with.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, they don't even know.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So they don't know whether they have Italian, Polish, Irish, any. They don't know any other, nationalities that exist inside them.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's really, really Native American. I know a lot of white people that have Native American in them. You know what I mean?
My sister-in-law, or daughter-in-law does, yeah.
Yeah, a little Cherokee, Blackfoot,
she
Sioux
has to
Indian.
Be a Cherokee, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so that's a good thing. But, yeah, those ones in New York, when they say they Polish, they Polish.
And they say and you better not say no.
Right. When you're Irish, you're Irish. Yeah, that's the one thing about New York white folks that's different from Midwestern white folks is the fact that they know what the hell they are.
It was kind of like that in Chicago. I don't know if you know it, but I was assistant athletic director at DePaul in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that. There were neighborhoods that if you walked into the Polish neighborhood, you better pretend like you're a Pole.
That's right. That's right. That's in New York.
One of my basketball players, Terry Cummings, who was in the NBA for, I don't know, 19 years, made a lot of money. Terry, one day, I used to walk, get off the L, and if I had lots of time, I could walk the mile and a half to DePaul, their north campus. And I'd walk there, and Terry heard that I was doing that. He said, "Mr. Coble, you're walking right by Cabrini Green," which was a project.
Oh, man, doozy.
I said, "Yeah." He says, "You can't do that." I said, "Why not?" He says, "You're white." Said, "Yeah, but nobody bothers me." He says, "Well, I'm black, and they tried to shoot me."
Cabrini Green.
So don't do that.
Yeah.
I did it, but I was a little more cautious from then on. But anyway.
Cabrini Green was notorious for violence.
Yeah, it was.
They would throw kids off the roof. And
yeah, it was horrible.
Oh, yeah, very bad.
Yeah, the female mayor of Chicago lived there for a month just to prove that it wasn't bad, but she got out in a hurry.
I can only imagine.
Jane Burns, was it? Yeah, I think it was Burns, yeah. Anyway, well, we're cut down to about 3 minutes, but
okay.
You told me where you were born. Did you live in Brooklyn, or did you live outside of Brooklyn any time?
I joined the military.
Okay, where did you go in the military?
I went to South Korea.
Okay.
That's where my overseas duty was, but I was in Fort Dix, Fort Gordon, Fort Jackson.
Wow, bounced around.
Yeah, and Fort Ord.
Yeah. Now, were you Army?
Army, yes. Yeah.
So you and I are brothers under the Army sign.
That's right.
I was an Army kid.
Mm-hmm.
I had a tough duty. I had to sing as an Army.
Oh,
with the United States Army Field Band. What was your MOS?
Well, my MOS, I had two of them. I had 91S, which was an environmental sanitation specialist.
Okay.
And I also had 72 Echo, which was a telecommunications center specialist. I was at Mars station in Seoul, and we ran a syndication show with Casey Kasem's Top 40.
Yeah, sure.
So I was on the air with the American Forces Korean Network, and I was at the Mars station, and I would just run the program. It was already pre-recorded on discs, and I would only open up the microphone only to say, you're listening to the American Forces Korean Network. I'm Army Private Ted Williams, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But here's the catch. This is before the movie with Robin Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
I would do, instead of doing "Good Morning Vietnam," I would, excuse me, every morning I was on the air, Glenn, I would be Army Private Ted Williams. The next day, I'd be Marine Gunnery Sergeant Ted Williams.
I love it.
I'd be Navy Seaman. And last, Air Force Tech Sergeant Ted Williams.
Covering all the services.
Every day was all the, yeah. And the brass didn't like it, but the enlisted loved it.
I bet they did.
Oh, it was funny. What is he going to be today? I never imitated an officer.
Yeah.
I never said lieutenant or colonel.
Man. No, you could get in trouble for that.
Yeah,
that's
I might as well put the brass on my shoulder if I did that.
All right. Well, we're down to our last 30 seconds, so I'm going to cut away.
Okay.
And we're going to be back with Ted Williams in the next 45 minutes. I hope you give us a call. I forgot to give our phone number. It's 740-383-9944 if you want to call in. But we'll be back in about 15 minutes. Thanks for listening.
Glenn, I love you.
I love you too.
All right.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. From legendary comedian Orson Bean singing the Baloney Song.
Two Irishmen and a Hebrew once went out for recreation, and they took enough provisions along to spend a week's vacation. But they got lost out in the woods, the nights grew dark and lonely, and at last all of their food ran out, except a piece of bologna. Now one of them said as he picked up a knife, "There's no use in us carving, for if we do, there won't be enough to keep us all from starving. So I suggest we go to bed, and tomorrow," said Maloney, "whoever has the nicest dream wins the piece of bologna." The following morning when they awoke, a quarter after seven, one of them said, "I had a dream. I died and went to heaven. St. Peter met me at the gate, riding on a pony. Now I don't think you can beat that dream. I win the bologna." The other one said, "I had a dream too, and mine was a world beater. I also died and went to heaven, welcomed by St. Peter. He rushed to me, held out his hand, he said, 'Hello, Mahoney. No, I don't think you can beat that dream. I win the baloney.'" The Hebrew said, "I'm dreaming too. It's a dream that couldn't be sweeter. I've seen you both go up to heaven, welcomed by St. Peter. I waited and waited and waited around, and oh, I got so lonely. I didn't think you was coming back. So I got up and I ate the baloney."
To legendary stand-up comic Marty Allen.